Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Dallas Morning News, Mike Hyka. Mike, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. It's always fun.
Mike, we were just talking before about the NHL trade deadline, which is rapidly approaching. The Stars have a very interesting player that could be bandied about in trade. That's obviously Brendan Morrow. Do you think that the Stars will trade Brendan Morrow before April 3rd? And if so, what kind of package will they be looking for in return?
I do think they will. The wild card in all this is that Brendan does have a no-trade clause. So if he does not like the trade, he can veto it. The other thing, I think, if he has to make a decision on would he rather ride it out with the Stars and then go into free agency, or would he, you know, like to take a run with a quote-unquote, you know, real contender. So that'll be interesting. But, yeah, I'm thinking 70-30, 80-20 that he'll get traded. On what they want back, they would love prospects. They have had struggles with their trades in recent years, and Joe Nieuwendyk's made some good ones and some bad ones. But the trade that everybody's looking at right now is getting Cody Eakin out of Washington from Mike Ribeiro. And that was, you know, Cody Eakin, Washington was deep at center, a 20-year-old kid. He wasn't what you would call an A prospect, but the scouts did a really good job of finding somebody who, you know, through 25, 30 games this year, looks like a player is going to stick around here for a decade. And that's what fans are kind of dialed in on right now. They'd love to try and get a defenseman who's in that, you know, in that range. I know Pittsburgh probably has 7 or 8 defenseman prospects of the Stars with, you know, pretty much love any of them. So that's what they're looking at, or a draft pick. I mean, they're trying to trend younger, and that's what that's what this is about right now.
Talk about trending younger, Mike. You know, in terms of where they are right now in the playoff race, you know, 3 points out of last place, but 3 points out of sixth place. Is that going to skew the organizational vision in terms of, as you mentioned, accumulating young players?
It could, because Joe Nieuwendyk is a very competitive GM, and his history for his first three seasons is he's gone for it pretty much every year. He's missed every single year. So now, you know, you have that experience there of, okay, we went for it and missed, and we didn't get a really great draft pick. We didn't really, you know, accumulate any kind of prospects because we were in 10th place or 9th place. We didn't trade off our veterans at the trade deadline. So now, do you go with the history of he's done this 3 years, or do you go with the history of it hasn't worked for 3 years? Personally, I lean towards the fact that he's always going to try and make the playoffs. He believes in it. He believes it's important for the club. He brought in guys like Whitney and Yager with the promise that, hey, you're not just here for a year. We're really going to try and build, and we feel we have as good a chance as anybody. So I tend to think he's going to go for it, but it depends, I guess, on what the offers are. And I think also the other wild card in all of this is owner Tom Gilardi has been here for a year now, and I think he feels more comfortable. And if Tom Gilardi tells Joe Nieuwendyk, hey, you need to sell off some of these veterans, well, that could definitely change how Joe Nieuwendyk looks at it.
You know, like along those same lines, Mike, you know, you mentioned Mike Ribeiro and traded, he's a pending UFA this year, traded this past offseason for Cody Eakin. You know, a player they got in a separate trade is a center who's in the same situation, and that's Derek Roy, and we've heard his name bandied about a bit, you know, possibly like a team like Vancouver interested and maybe some others. What are you hearing on the Derek Roy front, and have they engaged at all in extension talks?
They have engaged in a lot of extension talks, and I'm not exactly sure where it is right now. Neither side is commenting. You hear things, you hear leaks here and there. I'm guessing it's not going particularly well. I tend to think, and this is Michael Ryder and his agent told Stars right out front, look, we're going to free agency. We just feel like that's the best path for Michael. And the Stars said, fine, well, then we're going to go get a more secure contract in Eric Cole. And I think at some point in the next week or so, you know, the Stars may be informed from Derek Roy that, you know, if he doesn't get, and this is just a guess, he doesn't get $6 million a year, then, you know, then he's going to free agency because he believes he's worth it out there. And if he, you know, if that information is conveyed to the Stars, then I definitely think they'll try and trade him.
Mike, you just mentioned Eric Cole, which leads greatly into my next question. You know, he's only been a Dallas Star for a couple of weeks now, but how would you rate his play so far since coming over from the Habs?
He's a C. He does all the things you like to see, like he passes the eye test, but his stats have not been good. I think he's got one goal in eight games or nine games, and no assists. So they would love to see him have a bigger impact, but when you look at what he does, he is a very fast skater. In fact, maybe one of the top two or three on the team right now, and that's with a bunch of young kids. He's a big body. He goes to the net. He seems to have pretty strong defensive awareness. So all those things are things that I think, you know, it's funny. A lot of people compare Ryder, and Ryder's got 9 points, to Cole. And what I think the Stars see what Joe Neuendijk's vision is that Riley Smith will step into the role of Michael Ryder. You know, he's more of a perimeter player, more of a Michael Ryder-type player, and that Eric Cole will step into the spot of Brendan Morrow when Brendan Morrow's gone. So the expectation isn't for, I don't believe at least, for Eric Cole to be a 40-goal scorer. It's more to fill in and be able to play that second-line, third-line winger and do it with more speed and more physicality than Brendan Morrow will over the next 2 years.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News, filling us in on what's going on with the Dallas Stars. Mike, probably, you know, one of the most dynamic players on the Stars lineup and in the NHL as a whole is Jamie Benn. Two-part question. Can you update us on his injury status for tonight's game? And how would you rate his play this season since, you know, he was a restricted free agent for the first part of the season?
He has a game-time decision for tonight, but they skated him. Like, I mean, you see little things in practice and stuff. He skated on a line today with, where the heck was it? But they took him away from Jagr, sorry. I can't remember who it is. Whitney and Cole. He skated on a line with Whitney and Cole today. And Ryan Garbutt is most likely not going to play, and Tomas Vinsor stayed out and was skated pretty hard. So I'm saying it's 90% chance that Jamie Benn's playing tonight. As far as his play, it's kind of all over the map. He is dynamic. He has that skill. I still think even after, what, 2.5 years now, he's still trying to learn the center position because he played wing his whole life. And then when Brad Richards got hurt a couple of years ago, the Stars moved him to center, and they've pretty much kept him there since. He's been very affected by... He's been on line with Jaromir Jagr, I think, every game before tonight. And I do believe that he has deferred to Jagr or tried to focus his play on what Jagr wants. And I think that may have kind of messed with his mind a little bit. But, yeah, he's a dynamic player. He still scores points, but he's kind of been all over the place so far this year.
Mike, you mentioned Cody Eakin, you know, at the top of this segment, and you said that, you know, he might be the type of guy that the Dallas Stars signed to a 10-year deal. What exactly is it about Cody Eakin that, you know, that the Dallas Stars are so in love with?
Because he fits. They need energy. They need youth. They want to be a team that can defend because that's been a problem in the last couple of years, but they also want to be a team that can attack. And, you know, we give Joe a hard time because teams like Phoenix and Nashville come in here, and those are teams on a budget, which the Stars are a team on a budget, and they have an identity, and their identity is defend, get the cheapest players. You know, if we don't have as much skill as the other team, that's fine with us. And so, you know, we're like, okay, that's the identity that maybe the Stars should embrace. And Joe Neuendijk is like, no. We can be as good as anybody. We want to play like the Kings. We want every line to have something good about it. We want them to be able to attack. We want them to be able to defend. You know, he sees the Blackhawks or the Bruins and says, we want every single line to be a strong line. And that's where Cody Eakin fits in. He, you know, if he's playing on your third line, then you've probably got a pretty darn good third line. If you need him to move up to the second line, I think he's got the ability to do that. He hasn't really shown it at the NHL level yet, but I believe he has the ability to do that. And so that's what they like about him, the versatility. They're a little light on center anyway, since they have to trade Derek Roy. That's going to make him even lighter at center. So having a guy like Cody Eakin who can do so many things, who could scale up the lineup if he needs to, that's a perfect fit on the third line, which allows Vern Fiddler to drop to the fourth line. He makes a lot of things work for the Dallas Stars.
Mike, you've been writing about this a lot in the Dallas Morning News about, you know, the rookies that the Stars are currently using on the back end. Do you think that as the team is currently constructed, specifically the defense, do you think that, you know, they can get the job done and they're good enough to get the Stars into the playoffs?
A lot depends on Kari Lehtinen, because Kari Lehtinen can make those young defensemen a lot more confident. And in my opinion, the biggest issue for this team right now is the confidence of the defensemen. They play nervous. Alex Goligoski, it's funny, I've said this several times, but the Pittsburgh Penguins have taken Matt Niskanen, who is a very nervous defenseman here, and turned him into Alex Goligoski as a, you know, second or third pairing, you know, steady guy. And the Stars have taken Alex Goligoski and turned him into Matt Niskanen. So clearly they have some issues with how they use defensemen, what expectations they put on them, possibly how much the forwards help the defensemen. And so the key in my mind is fixing their brains more than it is their level of play. Brendan Dillon's come in and been great. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that you can say about Brendan Dillon, as much as anything, I mean, he's a huge guy. He's a good skater. He's got a big shot. But the guy's just got confidence. He's just got it. And when he's out on the ice, you can tell he's not thinking about making a mistake. He's thinking about, hey, how can I get this puck over here? How can I do this? And when you watch players like Niskanen when he was here, and when you watch Goligoski now, and mm-hmm. even when you watch somebody like 20-year-old Jamie Oleksiak, you can see from the press box, they're like, boy, I sure don't want to make a mistake. And I just don't think you can play defense in the NHL that way. And that's an issue for them. And I don't know if that's the expectations that are put on them. I don't know if that's the young coaching staff and Paul Girard and Glenn Gullitson. I don't know if it's just the system does not allow the forwards to support the defensemen as much as they can. But that's a battle, and I'll take this all the way back and say, if Kari Lehtinen cleans up messes like he does in a lot of these games, it goes a long way in allowing those defensemen to be more confident. So we'll see. I will say this, that Phoenix, they had more veteran defensemen, but Phoenix's defense looked a whole lot better when Mike Smith was stopping, you know, 38 shots a game. And I think that, you know, the Stars are a team, talent-wise, that's, you know, comparable to Phoenix, where if the goalie gets on a hot streak, I do believe they can beat anybody in the league.
Mike, final question. Realignment was approved this week, and people don't realize that the Stars were playing, you know, in the Pacific Division, but when they're loading up on 24 games against their division in a regular 82-game season, that the fans were watching all these games at 9 o'clock at night in Dallas. How happy are the Stars with the realignment and, of course, the travel predominantly in the central time zone?
I think Bill Daly and Gary Bettman are even happier because now the Stars won't be nagging them like they have for the last 10 years. They had the All-Star game. I don't remember when it was. It was 2007 or whatever. And, like, the first three questions were about realignment. And Gary Bettman's going like, yeah, we know. We know. You guys want to get out of the Pacific. We understand. It's a huge deal. They had some really good rivalries with Anaheim, with San Jose, a little bit with L.A., but more with the other two. But bottom line, some of the biggest games of the last decade ended at midnight in Dallas. And that's tough. I mean, they had shootouts, they had overtimes, they had just fantastic games against the Sharks when both teams were trying to fight for the division championship, and the game's ending at midnight.
Yeah.
And it was really tough for the fans. So this is great. The other thing is that all three, L.A., Anaheim, and San Jose, are further than Winnipeg. Winnipeg's the furthest one in the new division. I think it's 1,100 miles to Winnipeg and 1,200 to L.A. So right then and there, you know, the length of time that you're going to be in traveling is going to be reduced, and the amount of time zone that you have to go over will be reduced. And that in itself, I think, is going to allow them to practice more, to not be so tired, to not have to give so many days off. So, you know, it's a plus in pretty much every category that they could speak to.
Mike Hyka from the Dallas Morning News will be seeing and hearing a lot more from you in the years to come now that we're in the same division. We look forward to it. Thanks very much, Mike.
No problem. It should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, get them all sent to your iPod each and every week. While you're at it, follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, we looked at the Eastern Conference playoff race. Let's take a look now at the Western Conference race, where, you know, it's hard to say that Chicago's been struggling, but, you know, they've lost a couple games in a row. And
well, they're struggling when they lose a game.
That's right. So they've lost two games in a row in regulation. And lo and behold, the Anaheim Ducks, with a game in hand, are only 4 points behind them for the top in the Western Conference. Really just goes to show you how nobody has talked about the Anaheim Ducks this year, mm-hmm. and how they're 23-3. So, you know, full marks to the Anaheim Ducks that nobody's talking about.
Except when we had Dan Wood on our show. No, I'm just kidding. But the Western Conference, and I think Richie would agree with this, and Drew, you would agree as well, is it's much more top-heavy than the Eastern Conference right now. And, you know, the Canucks have struggled. And there's a lot of talk, you know, Derek Roy's name has been mentioned as a possible guy that will go to the Vancouver Canucks or anybody you want to think of. But the Western Conference, the surprise has been obviously how dominant the Blackhawks have been, but as well the Anaheim Ducks. And the teams that are still sticking around, the Detroit Red Wings, the Wild have gotten up there. But again, the playoff race in the Western Conference is a lot more, I don't know if you want to say selective, because there's a few teams there that they're sticking around, the Flames and the Oilers, and mm-hmm. you know, we just talked to Mike Hyka, the Stars are sticking around, but I think you could almost limit it to that last playoff spot going to one of the Wild or the Coyotes or the Predators, all teams that right now are kind of playing really not particularly that well, not particularly that bad. A team to me that is just starting to get going, and I know Richie picked them, I believe, to win the Stanley Cup, is the St. Louis Blues. And they're one team that hasn't fully, yeah, sure, they're in fourth place, but they're just starting to get back to the level that they were playing last year. And, you know, it's amazing, but, you know, Ken Hitchcock puts Jake Allen in there, three straight wins. Well, we talked to Jeremy Rutherford. I mean, they couldn't get good goaltending if their life depended on it. Now Allen stepped in there.
You look at the Western Conference, though, and you mentioned top-heavy, and you're exactly right, because third place is Vancouver at 32 points, and 14th place is Columbus at 26. 6 points between second and 14th. Sorry, third and 14th. I mean, that's crazy. You look at the goal differentials, and that's generally a good indicator of quality hockey teams. After Chicago with a plus 28 differential, and Anaheim with a plus 25 differential, which shows you that there's no, you know, there's no optical illusions there in terms of the Ducks. The next best team is LA, and they're playing. They've lost two in a row, but they're playing well, good hockey. They're plus 7. Nobody, aside from St. Louis and Vancouver, are even in the plus. Think about that. I mean, there's only the three teams. You have LA at plus 7, goal differential, more goals than goals against.
There's five teams in the entire conference that have a positive goals for versus goals against differential.
But I'm saying, yeah, exactly. You add it up, LA plus 7, St. Louis plus 4, Vancouver plus 3. So you have 14, plus 14. Anaheim and Chicago, either or, has a better goal differential than...
So you know what that means?
Yeah, the other teams. I mean, the other teams in the playoffs combined.
You know what that means, though, Richie? The Ducks and the Hawks have just been beating everybody.
Yeah.
Well, that's what that means.
The records also indicate that. Detroit Red Wings are in fifth spot right now. They just lost Kyle Quincy. And they don't have a lot of depth on their back end.
Yeah, but he's replaceable.
Well, I mean, the
Red Wings beat the Oilers in overtime yesterday. Pavel Datsyuk, who I was telling Richie, put a move on Jeff Petrie, who earlier in the game scored a goal on himself, which was unfortunate. Reminds me, shades of Steve Smith back in the day, for those who are old enough to remember that. But the Detroit Red Wings, still, I mean, without Nicholas Lidstrom, Cronwall's done a great job. Mm. And you look at the Red Wings, they're still just such a well-oiled machine. And you go into the overtime and, you know, Franzen and Datsyuk just, you know, doing what they always do, you know, making, you know, defenses look so vulnerable. But I have no worries about the Detroit Red Wings. And we talked about that before this short season started. You know, they find a way to get it done. They rarely lose three or four games in a row. And I know, Drew, your point is well taken, Kyle Quincy. But I see the Wings as a team. They'll pick up a veteran defenseman before the trade deadline. I'd be surprised if they don't, because I have them making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Quincy's, you know, you don't want to lose defensemen. But I'm not the biggest fan of Kyle Quincy. I think he can be replaced and not lose too much.
I hope you don't think that about me, Reggie.
You could say that for off air. But, you know, you look at the Red Wings, and they're definitely a team that needs to, and they know this more than anyone else. I mean, Kenny Holland always has a firm grasp of reality on what his team has or doesn't have.
Yep.
That's a team that's certainly going to be in the market for an upgrade on defense
come the
trade deadline or, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
A veteran.
Yes, a veteran, because, I mean, you know, to get a young defenseman that's of any quality, it costs you too much almost. Right.
And you look at the, you know, your youth, and you look at Brian Lassoff, and you look at Jakob Kindle. And then you look at even Jonathan Erickson. You say, oh, Erickson, you know, he's not young anymore. True, but Jonathan Erickson camp is a forward. So in defenseman years, he's kind of young. And you know, Quincy's been around a bit, but still not a real veteran in the mid-30s kind of thing. And Cronwell came into the league later than you'd think, so he's a little bit older than you think. But, yeah, I think you need a little bit more of a veteran presence there. Always somebody who you want to be able to move the puck, especially if you're Detroit. You know, they're not going to just have a guy who sits there and can't transition the puck well. But those also aren't growing on trees, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do in terms of who they pick, and what they utilize in terms of assets to make that happen.
Richie, and you look at the Western Conference, and yeah, there's 20 games to go, but, you know, regardless if, you know, Nashville or Dallas is able to squeak in, and, you know, then congratulations, you get to play the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. Mm-hmm. But you look at how tight the Western Conference is there, and I think Detroit, if they're one move away, you talk about, you know, getting a Brendan Morrow or something like that, they're one move away from potentially, you know, putting themselves as one of the favorites in the Western Conference. But look at the Vancouver Canucks, have slipped a little bit, finished the third. Well, congratulations, you're playing the defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round again.
But that's just it, and that's exactly right, Izzy. I mean, you look at the where these teams set up, all you really care, I mean, you prefer home ice advantage, don't get me wrong, but all you really care about is getting in.
Yep.
Right. For a lot of the, especially the upper echelon teams.
Yep.
But even like Anaheim and Chicago have been so great, but like you look at whoever gets into eighth, and you know, Phoenix comes into eighth and Phoenix gets a rematch with Chicago again, or Chicago completely and totally overwhelming favorites, they're favorites. Can they get beat? Yeah.
It seems like in the Eastern Conference, it would be more overwhelming favorites, you know, when you look at the 1-8, 2-7 matchups than necessarily in the Western Conference.
I think that's a fair point, because if you're going to be like a team like Toronto, and I know you've played Pittsburgh tough, but if Pittsburgh ends up number one, they're going to beat you.
I think really what I would say from, you know, analyzing the Western Conference and Eastern Conference standings as they stand now with about 7 weeks to go in the season, in my opinion, is really there's only three elite teams in the entire NHL. I wouldn't put Anaheim in as an elite team. I think it's Boston, Pittsburgh, and Chicago. And aside from those three teams, I think it's, I don't know. I mean, it's a crapshoot.
I think everyone else is, you know, a bit of a dog's breakfast, but it wouldn't shock me if, you know, L.A. got hot again and made a run in the Western Conference. But,
right.
You know, I do agree that it seems like right now Pittsburgh, Boston, and Chicago are the cream of the crop
in
the NHL.
And you can make an argument for putting Anaheim in there, but to me, I still think that it's a little early. They've won five in a row. It's a little early to call them an elite team because not too long ago last year they weren't even a playoff team.
So. And Corey Perry.
And Corey Perry is always the big asterisk next to them. Absolutely right. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by some individuals from the Canada-Israel hockey program. Talk a little bit about the growing hockey program in Israel. Mike Masheka, the head coach of the program, is going to join us live in studio. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. this week at Rumors. Steve Ranazzisi has been here. You know him as the commissioner from the FX show, The League. Completely sold out, has been all week. Thank you very much, Winnipeg, supporting live comedy. We'll do it all again starting Tuesday with Kelly Taylor in town for 2 weeks. You can get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com or give him a call at 204-488-4520. Pleased to welcome in studio Mike Mashaka from the Canada-Israel hockey program. He's traveled a long way, all obviously, from Israel to be here with a group of students who are playing in a hockey game tomorrow morning at the MTS Iceplex against a team made up of some Winnipeggers. Mike, thank you for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Happy to be here, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, let me just make sure I get your title right. You're the head coach of the Canada-Israel hockey program, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Now, give us a little bit of a background about the program. I understand that there's it started about, you know, 2-3 years ago with 40 kids in Israel, and now it's grown to over 400 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, the school was opened in January of 2010, and we had about 40 kids involved at that point. And then right now, we have about just over 400, so it's quite an amazing growth.
Now, Israel wouldn't be known as a cold weather climate. In fact, I think given that, it might be the new home of the Phoenix Coyotes, if you want to put in an offer there. How many rinks, how many skating rinks are in Israel, and how much ice time is available to these kids?
Well, there's about 4 rinks in total, but there's only one Olympic-size rink, and that's the one that we work out of in Matula at the Canada Center. So they're scattered throughout, and the other two are small rinks. They're not even regulation NHL size, so it's not really proper for real good NHL or hockey training. So we have the only Olympic-size rink in Matula.
So that's in Matula. And now the program, is it an after-school program or is it a hockey camp sort of thing? I mean, how does it work? How do you get these kids who might, not necessarily have hockey first and foremost on their mind, how do you get them involved in the program?
Well, there's many. We have a few different programs within the hockey school. Our main hockey program is after school. The kids come from about 4:30 until 8:30 at night. We have 3 separate groups who come in different age groups and skill levels. We have a couple school programs where kids just come in the middle of the day and it's part of their school curriculum, like phys ed or whatever, and they're just learning skating. And we have a special needs group who comes and they just do skating and kind of confidence building stuff. And we have a group from Nazareth who comes on Sundays, and they're doing full-on hockey training, but they're during the middle of the day. But other than that, it's all after-school program.
Mike, you mentioned that the Canada-Israel hockey program, it's grown from 40 to 400 in 3 years, and that the goal is to reach even get those numbers even further up. Are we starting to see, with the announcement that there's going to be a few new hockey rinks built in Israel, Are we seeing a bit of a boom?
I'm hoping so. That's definitely part of the goal of what we're trying to do with the hockey school. We want to put Israel on the hockey map, and we want to put hockey on the map in Israel. So right now, it's not a very well-known sport, but it's grown quite dramatically in the few years, and it's getting more and more popular every year.
Mike, how did you get involved in this?
Well, in 2010, one of my good friends, Jeff Merrick, was heading down with Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun.
Yeah. Jeff, a former guest on this program a number of years ago, in fact.
Yeah, so Jeff's a very good friend of mine, and we play hockey together in Toronto. He was going down, and about 3 weeks before, unfortunately for Steve, he broke his leg playing in a rec hockey game. So Sydney Greenberg, who's the sponsor of our school, asked Jeff if he had somebody who could come down, and thankfully Jeff asked me to go down.
Oh, really?
And kind of that's the whole history. I was there for 8 days at that point to do a camp, and then last year Sydney called me and asked if I would go down and be the coach for the season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. We're joined in studio by Mike Mashaka. He's the head coach of the Canada-Israel hockey program. Now, Mike, you think, hockey program in Israel, you would think that it's, a predominantly Jewish program, or featuring at least Jewish students or Israeli students. From what I understand, it's not. You also have a number of Arab kids and Druze kids involved in the program.
Your kids, Drew?
Not my kids. Druze, D-R-U-Z-E, as opposed to D-R-E-W.
Yeah, but we're happy to have Druze, your kids, as
Thank
well.
I don't have any kids. One step at a time.
Yeah, but right now, it's quite an eclectic eclectic mix that we have. We have Jewish kids, Arab kids from the Druze village of Majd al-Shams. We have Christian Arabs from Nazareth and Muslim students as well. So that's another goal that we're trying to do. We're trying to bring these kids together, try to bridge the gap culturally through the game of hockey. A lot of these kids, you know, depending on whether Jewish or Arab, you know, they haven't hung out with Arab or Jewish kids because most of the communities, they're kind of together that way. But so they've come to the hockey school and they're hanging out with Jewish or Arab kids for the first time. And now we bring them on a trip like this to Winnipeg. And you guys know from your hockey backgrounds and any time you've gone on a trip, I mean, even NHL teams go on team-building trips and to get them closer. So these kids now are rooming in homes here in Winnipeg with the wonderful Jewish community here. And they're becoming great friends. And they've never seen each other before, some of these kids. And we were at a house last night for dinner, and the kids were just having a whale of a time playing mini hockey and, you know, NHL 13 and all this stuff. So it's great, and we're making some big strides there.
So, you know, you've been here for about a week or so right now, is that correct? And the big game is tomorrow against a local team from Winnipeg. You know, how have the kids been on the ice, you know, training here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, we've been on the ice almost every day at the MTS Iceplex. We've got a fantastic program there, and the coaches have been absolutely amazing, and the whole MTS Iceplex has been unbelievable to us. The kids are on cloud nine here looking at, they can't believe that there's three rinks in one building, you know. And a lot of them might not want to go back to Israel after this, but we got to bring them back because we want to grow it there.
Mike, you've taught hockey, you're from Canada, and you've taught hockey in Toronto specifically before, and I imagine different age levels. And, you know, working with kids in Israel that maybe haven't had, you know, haven't been on the ice since they were 3 or 4 years old, what type of skills are different that you would be maybe teaching similar age kids in Toronto or elsewhere in Canada? And what have you maybe learned as a coach, you know, teaching kids that are at a different level and hockey's kind of new to them?
I get asked that question quite a lot, and
it's not a unique question, though. I thought it was unique, but
no, you're doing a fantastic job. Don't worry about it. But I get asked that question. It's interesting because really, there's not much difference with the kids on the ice. I mean, they're still kids playing hockey. Hockey's the hardest sport to learn, really. So it doesn't matter if they're from Toronto or Israel or Nazareth or Matula. They're all just kids trying to learn hockey, and the basic learning curve is pretty much the same.
Mike, in terms of, you know, hockey availability, what about media-wise? Like, are hockey games readily available for the kids to watch at all, maybe to pick up on the game and learn that way?
Well, it's tough because of the time difference. We're 7 hours ahead in Israel. So, I mean, for me to stay up and watch hockey games, or for the kids, they got to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning just to watch the puck drop. And so basically what the kids do, well, also Fox Sports does broadcast some games, like maybe once a week they'll have an NHL game. But basically what these kids do, they've been like turned into hockey freaks, and they absolutely love it. They're looking up the games on YouTube and just looking up clips, and they find their favorite players that way.
Now, obviously, Israel is a burgeoning hockey community, but you guys did have some success on the international stage. I believe it was 2 years ago you won the IIHF, correct me if I'm wrong here, was it the Group C competition that the Israeli men's hockey team won?
That was actually about a month and a half ago, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No problem. So we had a group that was in the under 18, Group C. And so basically they won the group, and they did it in dominant fashion. Wow. And a lot of those kids, almost every single one of those kids on that team has come through our school at one point or another. And there's certain kids on that school, on that team, who are still affiliated with our school and with our home club back in Matula. So it was very impressive, and we were all very proud, and Israel was very proud of them, of what they did. So now they've moved up a level on the international rung, and next year they'll get to compete at the higher level.
Wow. Now, you know, and you've also reached out to some, you know, NHLers that people would know of. Former NHL head coaches have a good connection to Israel. Did I read this right? Mike Keenan is going to be Israel's head coach at next year's Maccabiah Games?
I believe that's a possibility. To be 100% honest with you, I'm not fully privy to all that information, but I mean, that means I'm out of a job, so I don't know if I'm too happy about that, but we'd be happy to have Mike Keenan come down and be great.
Mike, you mentioned, you know, that, you know, some of the kids are staying with students of Brock Gordon School, I believe, but, you know, the kids that you're coaching, you know, they're obviously having fun, and they're at a young age. What other types of things, you know, aside from the fact that you guys are practicing at the Iceplex, what types of other things are you trying to get the kids to take out of, you know, being in Winnipeg?
Well, yesterday we, first of all, they're just blown away by the snow and stuff like that, and they're loving it. There's no complaints about it being cold or there's too much snow. They are absolutely loving it.
This is our spring, by the way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But so they've been doing all kinds of things. Yesterday we went curling, and we actually curled with a former Scott Tournament of Hearts winner, a three-time winner. So it was really exciting for the kids. The kids were loving it. And just going around, a couple of the kids actually were lucky enough to go check out a Jets game. Not many of them did, but a few of them actually went to a Jets game the other night against the Rangers. And just taking in as much as possible. You mentioned Brock Gordon and the whole community there. All the family and friends of that school have been absolutely tremendous, helping host our kids and hosting us coaches. And it's been a really, really great time for everybody.
What about your personal experience, Mike, being over in Israel, and how are you enjoying that?
It's unbelievable. You know, it's such an amazing place. I mean, before I went there in 2010, I had no real idea of what Israel was like other than, unfortunately, what we see on the news. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I was able to go over there and get a firsthand look on what it actually is like, and it's really, literally one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's got some of the most beautiful people inside and out in the world. It's got a lot of amazing things, and there's really not enough good things that I can say about Israel. I absolutely love it there. I could totally see myself living there for a long time. And the people there have been amazing to me, welcoming me and bringing me into their homes and into their communities. And it's been absolutely tremendous. I can't say enough good things about the state of Israel. It's awesome.
Leave you with two questions, Mike. If people want to get more information on the Canada-Israel Hockey School, how can they go about and do that?
Well, we have a Facebook page. It's Canada-Israel Hockey School on the Facebook, and they can get in touch that way. And we also have a website. I believe it's icehockey.co.il. So the easiest way is to go to the Facebook and catch the Canada-Israel Hockey School. And we have all our information. We have postings there and all kinds of stuff.
We'll send that out via our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, so people can get it there as well. And, of course, you're from Toronto, but you're sitting in a studio in Winnipeg. Jets Leafs tonight, 6 o'clock here on this station. Who do you got?
Well, the Leafs got to bounce back. I mean, they've had a couple of tough games, including one here on Tuesday. So I got to say, sorry, Winnipeggers, I don't like your chances tonight. The Leafs are going to bounce back. I'm going to say it's going to be about a 4-2, maybe 4-3 squeaker.
Well, you're doing so much for hockey in Israel. We'll let that answer slide. Mike Mashaka, he's the head coach of the Canada-Israel hockey program. He's in town with a group of kids from Israel. There's a game tomorrow, 10 a.m. at the MTS Iceplex if you want to go check it out. Mike, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we'd love to have as many people come out and see our kids and show them some more hospitality and support them and see what real hockey fans are like here. They would love to see it.
I promise you, the fans won't chant Mashaka at them like they did Tortorella on Thursday night.
Yeah, please do not, but that would actually be kind of cool, I think. I don't know. Go ahead.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 20 minutes after 2 o'clock, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Following us 40 minutes from now, Hustler and Lawless. After them, our good friend Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Then the three-headed monster has the call in the booth tonight. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty.
Yeah, I think would it be the main unit here on Hockey Night in Canada tonight?
You would think so.
Yeah.
You would think so. That it would. I mean, this is the only 6 o'clock Hockey Night in Canada game that we have this year.
He's got a score.
It would be, yeah, Houston. And
I would
Simpson,
think it would
right?
be Houston, but
LA Friedman usually tweets out who it is, but I know that's it's pretty cool. I don't think you overlooked this either, Drew. I think we mentioned this on the podcast that we did this week. Playing in Toronto on Hockey Night in Canada, prime time, the game tonight.
Yeah.
For a lot of the players on the team, in Hockey Night Canada, the day games have a cachet, but it's that night game in Toronto. That's a big game. Like, the Jets are going to be up for tonight's game, regardless of the points in the standings and how important it is. Everybody gets up for Hockey Night in Canada in Toronto on a Saturday at 6 o'clock.
You're right, because the other games that have been, you know, the Hockey Night in Canada games this year are either the afternoon, right, you know, which are good games, but, you know, hockey, 6 o'clock, center of the universe, but there's something about it.
Yeah. American teams like Washington or even Ottawa just doesn't have that same cachet as the Leafs or the Habs or something like that.
This is it holds the biggest cachet, and everyone's going to be watching this game. It's awesome. It's going to be fun tonight.
It should be. Before we get to that, it's more, you know, the trade deadline. We've talked about it throughout this program. You know, mm-hmm. You know, 3 weeks away. Really, I think it's 3 weeks away. Is it? It's 3 weeks this coming Wednesday.
Yes.
No, 2 weeks this coming Wednesday.
Sorry.
Pardon me. Yeah. So, you know, it's time for, you know, the names are being bandied about. You know, if you had to pick one of the sort of guys who are a little bit below the radar. You know, not the top guys that we've heard that we talked about just a minute ago with, you know, Derek Roy, who we heard about, Corey Perry. You know, who's
Brendan Morrow.
Brendan Morrow. You know, who's one of those sort of second tier guys that jumps out at you as a guy that might be, you know, a good fit, you know, for a team around the NHL?
Well, it was mentioned. I think it was by Michael Tracos mentioning it. But what about Ryan Clough? You know, not your top line guy, but a guy who's been a good playoff player in the past, guys, and this is really what you're doing. You're acquiring players for the playoffs. He's a pending UFA. He's only making 3.625 on a cap hit. An up-and-down winger, an aggressive guy. I think he's the kind of player that's going to draw a lot of interest, and I think for a San Jose team that reality wants to go for it, and maybe he's not working there, or maybe they say, hey, we're not going to sign him. Let's get something for him, and maybe they do a swap with another team for a similar type player who maybe can help both teams. I think Clough is a guy to keep your eye on because of how his game, to me, fits in to a playoff structure, playoff mentality. Run, you know, a rugged, you know, can score, not afraid of anything, not afraid of engaging in contact, not afraid of going into the corner. Those players succeed in the playoffs. I think he's a player to keep an eye on.
I think, and Richie's struggled big time in San Jose this year, so that's actually a good recipe for a trade. You know, Drew, we mentioned Perry, we mentioned Morrow, Roy. You know, we've talked about Hainsey and Antropov, who are possibly in play for the Jets as trade candidates. You know, a guy that I was talking with Richie about, who I'm surprised hasn't signed a contract extension so far, is Nathan Horton. And for a team like the Winnipeg Jets, pending UFA, Nathan Horton hasn't been dominant this year, but, you know, he's one of those guys that on the Boston Bruins, they roll out four good lines, and Nathan Horton is a top six forward. I don't know if he's in play, but a guy like Nathan Horton, I mean, you talk a lot about the Perrys and all that, and those guys command a big trade. I don't know if the Boston Bruins want to give him up after, you know, they stuck with him through his injury problems, but he's the type of guy that would be coveted by so many Western Conference teams for a trade possibility. But again, I'm not sure. I haven't been following enough to know if that contract extension talks have happened, but you got to think that if they don't sign him to a contract extension, he, along with Corey Perry, is going to be one of the most sought after UFAs.
Again, the problem for those two teams are at this point that are very close probably to being legitimate Stanley Cup contenders.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, Nathan Horton, for the record, has 3 points today for the Boston Bruins. He's got a goal and two assists.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
No.
I'd be shocked. I mean, you know, to get him out of Boston, even though he's a pending UFA, what's it going to take to get him out of Boston at this point in time? Probably a fair bit.
Well, the reason why the team that's been mentioned the most as far as wanting a Brendan Morrow or wanting a Jerome Iginla is the Boston Bruins, because they just want that one more physical guy that can score. So it's not necessarily, I was just putting it out as a guy that's a UFA. But I think you guys are both right.
But, you know, there's so many teams that have similar needs there, you know, and I guess we'll talk. Do you want to talk transition, Drew, to the Iginla issue?
Sure, let's talk about Iginla.
Well, I mean, where does he fit in? And wouldn't he fit in on any team kind of thing? Like, you know, of course they say Crosby.
If he doesn't fit in, you'll make room for him.
Yeah, you know, Crosby in Pittsburgh could be an option. In Boston could be an option. L.A., they're tossing out him. Daryl Sutter obviously knows what you're going to get in Iginla. He plays a big game. I mean, he would fit in so well in L.A.
He's also a big game player.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had the opportunity to demonstrate that because he's been stuck on a, I'd say, mediocre Calgary team for the last 5 years. But when the spotlight is the brightest, Jerome Iginla does not shy away from that.
Look at the 2010 Olympics.
And 2002. What about this team? And I'm not sure if it's been discussed a ton. I'm not as into rumors as I once was. Kind of just, you know, see what
except
the
if it's
are.
Rumors, restaurant, comedy club.
Of course.
Nice line, as it.
But you know what? What about the Vancouver Canucks? And I don't, and I first of all, I would be, I'm always against like a team saying, I'm not going to trade a player in the division. I don't care. I mean, you're trying to get better, right? Although I know the optics in Calgary are such that they don't really want to go around that area. And I'm not sure the assets are there. But Vancouver, wouldn't Vancouver be a great spot for Jerome Iginla, a player who's physical, a forward, provides secondary, if not first option offense, and then pushes down a guy like Burrows, whatever it may be. It allows everybody and to drop down a slot and also feel more comfortable and the experience. And, you know, Vancouver, when they played against bigger teams, whether it be Boston, whether it be LA, both eventual Stanley Cup champions, they had trouble with the size. And Iginla wouldn't back down, as you guys mentioned, but it also was physically. He's big and strong. He doesn't skate as well as he used to. But he's still a very productive player. He's got a great shot. Imagine him with the Sedins with that one-timer. Imagine him, you know, even with Kessler and causing trouble behind the net when Kessler gets back. Do they have the pieces? I don't know. But, you know, goaltending-wise, I mean, just tossing out random ideas here. Maybe, you know, they need a goaltender of the future in Vancouver, in Calgary, and maybe you make a big deal of a Schneider and again, there's so
well,
many
that's
options.
That's why they're talking about Bernier in Los Angeles as being a potential there.
They are, exactly. And but again, it's going to cost a lot to get, and I'm not sure, and when you're, I'm tossing out random names like that, I'm saying it would be within a bigger trade. But that's the kind of player I think they need. So there's going to be a big market, I think, for him. The rumors earlier in the year about there not being a huge market and some question marks, I don't buy that. At the same time, let's qualify by saying the Flames win a couple in a row, which they have. Where are they now?
And that's been the problem with the Flames for the last number of years, is that just when you think they're ready to throw in the towel, they win a couple games. And, I mean, the truth is, you know, unless you can get Jerome Iginla under contract before April 3rd, the right move is to deal him.
You want to know why the Vancouver Canucks make sense, Richie? Quite simply, first of all, They're not getting a lot of secondary scoring. Mm-hmm. So right there, Jerome Iginla goes on your second line. As you mentioned, Kessler's injured. When he comes back, I don't think Kessler and Iggy would look pretty good together. And Eric Duhatchik of the Globe and Mail wrote about this, about not so fast, you know, Iggy going to the Kings. The Kings have started to play some good hockey now. Mm-hmm. They're starting to play well. Why are they going to rock the boat when they've already really got, they've got Richards and Carter and Kopitar and Brown and all these guys as in their top six? Why are they going to go out and trade Bernier when Jonathan Quick isn't having the best season? He hasn't duplicated his Conn Smythe performance, if you want to call it that. Not so quick. Boston and Pittsburgh, who everyone seems to be fixated as locations for Jerome Iginla, both of those teams are the two of the hottest teams in the league. Why are they going to mortgage the future when they're playing really well right now, knowing that Iginla isn't a guy that you're going to sign for more than 3 or 4 years? I think the Vancouver Canucks make a lot more sense as a trading partner than the Boston Bruins or Pittsburgh Penguins. As far as, you know, Iggy and Crosby, Chris, if you haven't looked, Chris Kunitz is doing a pretty good job, and Pascal Dupuis are doing a pretty good job on his line. So I don't know if you necessarily, you know, what do you need? The two best players, you want to take over the world here? So I don't buy in this Pittsburgh and Boston as, you know, I'm not saying they're not interested. I'm just saying I don't necessarily buy that over a team like Vancouver.
But Pittsburgh has 103 goals. They lead the league in goals. I mean, in the Eastern Conference, they lead the entire league in goals. So why are they adding more offense? Everybody who watches Pittsburgh has to know their need is on defense.
Right.
It doesn't make so much sense. And then you look at, I mean, it'd be the rich getting richer. Boston has 76 goals for, but they can score. And their defense is so good that I don't think it's really a need for them, as it is a need for a team like Vancouver. Now, of course, we don't know if they trade intra-division and all that stuff, but that's where I keep my eye on in terms of a team like that, even a team like St. Louis. Teams that could use that scoring and that veteran leadership to really take the next step.
Update from Pittsburgh. It's now a final for those scoreboard watching. The New York Rangers went down to defeat 3-0 at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Another game where you can say the Rangers have not shown up by all accounts from people that were at the game. Another laid egg by the New York Rangers.
You have to wonder when the Rangers make a move here.
Well, let's go to break and let's discuss how much longer does John Tortorella have, because we spoke about it. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Before we went to break, we mentioned that the Pittsburgh Penguins defeated the New York Rangers 3-0 today. Obviously, that helps the Winnipeg Jets in terms of the NHL standings, but it also leaves us with the question, how much more rope does John Tortorella have? 3 straight games now where they haven't even shown up. Is it time to make the move? They play Carolina on Monday at home. Is it time to make the move?
I think you can say that they showed up against the Jets, Drew. I don't think they showed up, by all accounts, against Buffalo. And then you were reading from people who were at the game today, they didn't necessarily show up today. They haven't gotten any points. I don't know if they got any power plays today, but they had 2 power plays over 2 games, one of which was negated by a penalty 4 seconds into that power play or whatever it was. The question has to be asked, I think, only because, well, first, I think Torts wears on people with his attitude and his just constant yelling, and I think that's also, you know, he's hard on his players. I think another aspect of that is, and the Rangers want to win here, and I realize they got a young, nice core in defense, signed pretty reasonable contracts, but, you know, Gabrick and Nash and Richards, I mean, Richards isn't getting any younger. I mean, Nash isn't an old player, but Gabrick, Nash, those guys are, you know, in years where you want to hit it. And Lundqvist. And you only got so many chances, is what I'm trying to say. And if they don't think that Tortorella can maximize their chance this year, they have to ask the question, well, if he can't this year, can he next year? And are we willing to wait and see if that's a chance? That doesn't mean that they can't come back this year. But these are all things I'm sure that Jeff Gordon and Glenn Sather are considering. The other factor is, as we spoke about last week, is that does the style of play change to be more conducive to the talent on the roster? All questions that I think need to be asked. I don't know, Drew. I don't think based on his success last year, even though I thought they should have beat Jersey and should have adjusted to what they were facing with Jersey, I don't know if you can pull the plug on a team, on a coach who got you to the conference finals last year and still could get you into the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, or if this really tails into 5, 6, 7 in a row, I think they'll be considering it a lot more than they are now. I just still don't think he gets let go.
It's at this point in time, it's too premature to start saying fire Tortorella. And I know that after the Jets game, people were saying that, you know, I think we said as well that, you know, it's something that you have to start thinking about. But the Rangers, even though they're a few points out of the playoffs, I think it's 2-3 right now. It's too early. There's way too much there's way too much hockey that has to be played before you start to get concerned. I think you're already concerned. You were concerned after the Buffalo loss. You were very concerned after the Winnipeg loss. And now you're starting to think, what types of moves do we have to make? But I look at the roster and, you know, I was expecting a lot better things out of Chris Kreider, JT Miller. Derek Stepan hasn't had a very good year. And Marian Gabrick hasn't had a very good year. Rick Nash, I believe, is, you know, right now a questionable guy with the injury that he suffered.
He came back and played the rest of the games.
So he came back. He's fine. But, you know, Rick Nash has struggled at times this year as well. And, you know, Richie mentioned the system that they're playing, trying to still block shots and trying to really rely on goaltending and play a really structured game. They have to do something. They have to do something because the way they're going right now, they're quickly fading. And, you know, the New York Rangers have invested too much in Brad Richards. They've invested too much in Rick Nash. They traded their depth to get Rick Nash. Brandon Dubinsky, Artem Anisimov. I'd still make the trade. But, you know, they're in a real, real vulnerable position here.
A couple signings in the NHL. Let's start with the one that happened late last night. That's the Phoenix Coyotes signing Oliver Ekman-Larsson to a 6-year, $33 million contract, average annual value of $5.5 million per year. You know, two-part question. One, we'll talk about the actual dollars and cents involved in this, if it's a good decision. Second, are you surprised a guy would make that long of a commitment to the Coyotes organization with all the upheaval that still surrounds the team?
When you're that young and you get thrown $30-something million, Drew, you'll play just about anywhere to get that money. He knows that it's not a guarantee that they're going to be in Phoenix for that period of time, but that contract's guaranteed, and he'll get it in any event.
Yeah, Seattle.
I like Oliver Ekman-Larsson. He can do a lot of things, and he's a good defenseman, and that contract's a little bit much, maybe up front for a player of that age. and production thus far, to an extent, because he's been really good this year, and he's made some really nice progress. But I think at the end of that contract, there's going to be some nice value. Like, this contract I like. I think Phoenix ends up getting more value at the end of it. And I understand that Ekman Larson wants that security. But you're talking about what's going to be your number one left side defenseman over that period of time. And he's only going to get better. And
he's 21 years old.
I know.
Yeah.
And he's only going to get better. And so I'm saying at the end of that contract, when he's 26, 27, he's going to be outperforming that $5.5 million cap at big time. And if you read Don Maloney's comments before the contract, we're going to sign on quality of play, not on potential. He's doing both here. But Ekman Larson's already really arrived. So, if your opponent's of Phoenix and you know whatever division they are in or whatever conference they're in and wherever they end up team-wise, that guy on the left side is going to be a tough impediment to go through because he's that good.
Richie, when the Ottawa Senators signed Erik Karlsson, everyone said great signing, didn't question the amount of money he was given. He was given a lot of money as well. Oliver Ekman Larson, I might even take over Erik Karlsson, and I know that people will say, what are you talking about? He won the Norris Trophy, got a lot of points. I don't think Erik Karlsson is by far one of the best defensive defensemen in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He is extremely talented offensively. I would take Oliver Ekman Larsson in that contract every day of the week. It's a lot of money. And sure, there's some uncertainty with where Phoenix is going to end up next year, Drew, but as Richie mentioned, I think $33 million will quickly make you forget about that potential relocation. And, you know, Oliver Ekman Larsson, it's so funny. It's interesting about him. He has quickly become the top defenseman, and they've got Zdeněk Mihalik and they've got Keith Yandle, but Keith Yandle is also not one of the best defensive defensemen if you've watched him play as well. Mm-hmm. But Oliver Ekman Larsson, I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy, and I think that contract really was a no-brainer for me. Big fan of Ekman Larsson. I know Richie's been talking about him since he came into the NHL. High draft pick. But, the Phoenix Coyotes are a type of team that seem to recycle forwards in and out of the lineup. But their solid defense is really what's the foundation of that team, along with Mike Smith. So I really like the signing.
Another signing came out of Montreal, where David Desharnais signs a four-year, $14 million contract with the Montreal Canadiens. 26 years old, sort of had his breakout year last year, and he's had another good year so far this year. Your thoughts on that signing?
You're getting, a guy who can play second-line center, a guy who's creative, can skate, can move the puck. He's not the fastest guy. I'm sorry, he's not the biggest guy, but he can skate, and he's a nice passer. You're getting him for about $3.5 a year.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable contract. You're giving that security. This is a guy who's a free agent that they signed. He's come a long way, and he can create for his line mates. I like the signing. I like what Mark Bergevin's doing there. I've basically liked everything he's done so far. This contract won't kill you. So if he doesn't perform, it won't kill you.
Right. He's getting a little bit above kind of the average salary in the NHL for a guy that's probably above average as far as what he offers talent-wise. But what I like about Desharnais is he put up huge numbers in the QMJHL, but then didn't get to the NHL level. He had to go through the ECHL and he had to go through the AHL. And now, as far as the Montreal Canadiens go, he is a huge part of their offense. We talked to Pat Hickey about this. Why are the Montreal Canadiens so much better this year? Well, David Desharnais was good last year, but it's the other guys that have contributed. Lars Eller, and now they've got Alex Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher in there. But Desharnais, it's nice to see that a guy like that, this is his first four-year deal. He's 26 years old. He's earned it. He earned it the hard way coming up through the minors.
Vincent Lecavalier was placed on injured reserve this week by the Tampa Bay Lightning. I believe it's a lower body injury. Expected to be out of action for 3 weeks. Is it now a lost season in Tampa Bay?
That pause makes you wonder. What are they at? 23 points right now in the standings.
Yeah.
I believe, Drew, maybe I want to confirm that. 23 points in the standings.
23 points in 27 games. They're 2-8 in the last 10.
7 points back of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you lose your second line center. I guess still the goaltending. If they can get the goaltending, maybe they make a run. But it's pretty close to being lost. I mean, again, it's kind of, we talked about the Jets playing Washington this week. If Tampa loses a couple more in a row and they get 13 points back, excuse me. I mean, 13 points back with 18, 17 games to go. How do you make that up in this day and age?
I said on the NHL midweek show that, the two goaltenders they have, this applies to New Jersey as well, but the two goaltenders they have, they can't continue. I mean, Anders Lindback was given the number one spot. He hasn't played well. and neither is Garon, and they have to make a move now. If you don't make a move now, then the season is lost. You can probably still get into the playoffs without LeCavalier. It hurts you, but they've got, you know, Teddy Purcell and other guys aside from St. Louis and Stamkos, you know, that can put the puck in the net. But you know, they're not doing themselves any favors. They're in a very vulnerable position, and within a week to 10 days, if they don't put three or four wins together, they won't be making the playoffs this year.
One thing to note is that they do, just as the Jets do, benefit from playing in the Southeast. And they'd be only 8 points out of the playoffs in the Southeast right now. So, and you have a lot of division games. So kind of that point is you're never really out of it in the Southeast, right? I mean, you never really are out of it, but right now you're okay. Because the top team in the division isn't 40 points, and you're not chasing 10 teams. You have less of a competition there in terms of those five teams, and Florida's terrible, and Washington's just as bad as you are. So the Jets and the Carolina are certainly no guarantee. They certainly aren't. So maybe you can't write them off just yet. And the Lightning, in terms of the way they set up on their power play and such, we've broken it down. Their first unit doesn't have LeCavalier. If they really want to be reliant on the first line, which obviously they are, but reliant on the first line, maybe change the style of play for the rest of the team to try and accommodate the fact that their goaltending isn't good and they need to play more defensive. They could do that, but that's a lot of ifs.
I think Philly and Washington have been big disappointments for me, but Tampa, in a way, is almost the biggest disappointment. And it relates to a lot of what Richie said about the power play and the moves they made, Carl and Salo on the back end, and they've gotten better. They just haven't been able to put it together, and haven't been getting the goaltending. They're scoring. They're up there as far as getting, you know, having the most goals. Stamkos leads the league, but just the goaltending has just been one of the biggest black eyes on that team.
A couple of other quick updates from a busy afternoon in the NHL. We already went through Pittsburgh defeating the Rangers 3-0. Boston defeats the Washington Capitals 4-1, that game in Boston. And with about a minute or so to go in the first period in Buffalo, Buffalo is up 2-0 on the Ottawa Senators. So far, everything breaking the Winnipeg Jets' way on the scoreboard on this Saturday afternoon. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. It's brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always available for your needs. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com.
Can Elite help me if I've eaten two-day-old cake?
No, but when you hurt your back after eating too much two-day-old cake, yes, they can help you in that case.
Okay, good to know.
Now, Ezzy, because you usually, you know, this is a quality use of your time, you created one of your famous all-something teams fresh on the heels of the, what was it? It was the all-food team.
Yep, we had the all-occupation team.
The all-occupation team.
Yep.
And wasn't there an all-Simpsons team?
That's correct.
Hat tip to Michael Remus for the all-Simpsons team.
So now you and Remus, spending many of your spare hours, have created the all-Pat NHL team.
If I can take the mic right now, because let's be honest, you've had the mic for way too long during this show. Remus and I have put together the all-Pat team in honor of St. Patrick's Day. I'm even wearing green.
Yes, you are.
For the occasion. So what we've done, and it's been hard work. It's been a lot of hours spent, you know, on the internet, over the phone. Just, you know, I'm a busy guy, Drew, so we took the opportunity to create an all-Pat team. And not only did we just do forwards, defense, and goaltenders.
No, because anybody can do that.
Anybody can do that. And if you look on NHL.com, a guy did it a few years ago. But we've got a front office. We've got beat writers. We even have an AHL component to our team. We even have a fan, Pat Sajak.
We also have a TV crew. We got a play-by-play voice, color analyst, and in-game television host.
Let's hear it.
Okay, we're not going to go through the whole team because that would take about 3 hours.
Okay, well, I'll just give you a few guys. In our front office, we've got Pat Quinn as our general manager. Pat Burns is our head coach. Pat Verbeek as our assistant general manager. Craig Patrick is our senior advisor to our general manager. Patrick Burke, you can play, is our head scout. We've got a couple beat writers. Shout out to Patrick Williams, online beat writer. Pat Hickey will be our print writer. And now we've even actually got an agent, Drew, Pat Brisson. So if we can just skip ahead, we'll go to our starting lineup here. Patrick Waugh and Patrick Jablonski are our goalies.
You have a backup goalie?
We have a backup goaltender, Drew. Now, even though, well, we'll post this on LegalCurve.com. Okay, we've got it up there. Shout out to Dave Minuk. So here's our current NHL roster, and I'll just go through it really quickly. Starting lineup, Pat Elias, Pat Sharp, Pat Kane, Pat Marleau, good Saskatchewan boy, Pat Dwyer, Pat Coletta, even though he's suspended, so maybe we'll put him on the suspended Pats. We've got Pat Kornqvist, Pat Berglund, Pat Bortolo.
Do you have any expats?
I don't think we have any expats. Pat Rissmiller. And quickly on defense here, defense was a little bit harder. We had a couple ex-NHLers. Pat Brisebois, Pat Stapleton, who played in the 70s. Patrick Daly, Devils draft pick. Pat Weirkotch on the Ottawa Senators. And Rory Fitzpatrick. So that's the all-Pat team right there.
Rory Fitzpatrick, by the way, is my favorite of them all, just by the fact he got the Pat in there on his, in the middle of his last name.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Dan Patrick's also the last name Patrick. He's our TV host. And he does the radio show for the rights holder that does the broadcast.
For the Pat team that doesn't exist?
That's right.
A lot of spare time on their hands here, let me tell you.
So we'll post that. It's good fun. I mean, St. Patrick's Day, Drew, is my favorite day of the year, and you know why. It has nothing to do with alcohol.
No, certainly never would have anything to do with alcohol.
It's my favorite holiday. I just really enjoy it, and you get to wear green. I love the color green.
Did you have a beer for every person you put on this team?
You might have to.
Oh, yeah, we might have to after thinking about the amount of spare time I have. But no, it's all good. Reem, I got to give Reem credit. He put most of this team together.
Well,
and it was fun working on it with this project.
Yeah, we definitely, a lot of it evolved from discussions we had in the press box, for sure.
I'm glad you guys are using your time valuably up there. Can we finish the show off with some rapid fire, then cheers and jeers? Maybe.
I'm pushing the button and it's not going.
Okay, so let's pretend the rapid fire music is playing right now.
By the way, Drew, that never happens with Rick Ralph on the round table.
That's what I like to say. Anyways, in their search for a winger to play with Joe Thornton and Logan Couture, the San Jose Sharks looked to their defense and moved Brent Burns from the defense to a forward position. The move has paid dividends so far, as Burns has 3 points in the 2 games since the switch. Hmm. At this point in his career, is Brent Burns better suited as a forward or a defenseman?
Well, first of all, Brent Burns was a forward in the OHL, so this is the reason why he's able to switch back to defenseman. Switch back to forward from defenseman. I don't think so, Drew. I realize Brent Burns can skate, he can shoot, he can do a lot of those things, but his value is as a defenseman. He's paid as a defenseman. And it's kind of like Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, the value he provides on the back end for the money he makes doesn't really make so much sense to use him for 15, 16 minutes a game on one of the top two lines. He wouldn't provide the same value, so I don't see this being a long-term issue for the Sharks. I see them moving him back to defense and being a big part of their team moving forward. He's got an extension. And the other issue, of course, is that Dan Boyle is eventually on his way out there, and right-handed shooting guy can provide offense. That's exactly what Burns is. So I wouldn't see this being a long-term solution for an issue that may exist right now.
I agree with Richie. I think Brent Burns is better suited as a defenseman. I'm glad that you brought this up because, you know, you go through a couple of guys that have, you know, made that switch. Matthew Dandeneau, everyone remembers he used to do that in Detroit and Montreal a little bit. But I think the game, as you guys know, is played so much differently as from a defenseman's point of view, as a forward's point of view. And it's nice, you know, he's got a couple of greasy goals in front of the net the other night. But, you know, he's been a defenseman since he came in the NHL. He's a good defenseman. He's got great wheels. And I think this is just something to get him going. Before they made the switch from D to forward, Burns was actually injured, and he was struggling and had, I think, only 0 or 1 point. So I think it's a way for Todd McClellan to get him going. And then they'll move him back to D, you know, as the season goes on.
Quick question from a listener. Now, you didn't mention the entire Pat team on air. Do you have James Patrick somewhere on the team?
We do have James Patrick on the team. He is, I believe, either a defenseman or I think he has a front office position now, does he not?
This isn't coach with the Buffalo Sabres, so we put him in the coach. We were low on coaches, but he could probably do both if needed.
Yep. From Winnipeg, by the way.
Okay, so just to make sure you haven't forgotten about
that. I'm glad that someone's, you know, getting into this, Drew, because you're definitely not into it.
It's true. According to an article in the LA Times, the NHL is investigating the possibility of holding an outdoor game at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. The NHL is confident that the refrigeration equipment will keep the ice solid throughout the game, despite the warm climate.
Is that because you're bringing some meat down there?
Commissioner Gary Bettman supposedly prefers the atmosphere and the charm of a wintry climate to that of palm trees and warm weather. Do you think it's time for the NHL to expand the outdoor games to non-traditional hockey markets?
I don't, Drew. I agree with Gary Bettman there. You know, it's the it's as much the background of the game itself and the atmosphere than it is the game. I mean, if you have, I've been to Dodger Stadium. It's a really cool place to be. Imagine you just be dropping a game in the middle of a background of Hollywood. I guess there's some cachet to that, but I like the idea of the snowing in a Pittsburgh Buffalo game, or the wintry background of a game at Wrigley Field. I'm with him on that.
Richie, first of all, any place that you are is a cool place to be. But this is called the Winter Classic. Winter being the operative word here.
Should I pat you on the back for that comment?
Very well done. Nicely done.
I think so. No, keep it in traditional markets. Come on.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I've never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Cheers and jeers to wrap it on a Saturday afternoon, Ezra Ginsberg.
Ooh, I get the honors, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
First off, shout out to a good buddy of the show, a good friend of the program, Sean Jacob, whose birthday yesterday, so I got to give him a big shout out. My cheer is going to Matty Leibel of The Big Show. After the game, the Rangers game, you know, it was very hyped up, what happened with me and John Tortorella last year with the question about the assistant coaches. Everybody's heard about that. You know, Matt Leibel asked a tough question. What did you think of the Tortorella chance? And the Rangers PR guy shut the interview down. All the fans wanted to hear the question, and all the beat writers, and Drew, I know you tweeted about this, all the beat writers wrote about it, so don't tell me that he shouldn't have asked that question. It takes cojones to ask the question, and Matty Leibel did it. So sometimes, you know, as a reporter, you've got to ask those tough questions. So he's going to get my cheer.
Richard Pollock.
I think it's an easy one for me today, Drew. Mike Mascheka, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Mascheka, that's
Mascheka,
correct.
And
Canada-Israel Hockey School,
yep. Who came in here today. I thought it was really interesting what he had to say, and really interesting what they're doing in terms of bringing cultures, bringing religions together, cultures together, and forging relationships over the game of hockey in a place where you probably wouldn't think that that would happen. I think it's an interesting story, and they get my cheer. He gets my cheer, and they get my cheer.
Well said. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers by jeering the Buffalo Sabres over their handling of Mikhail Grigorenko this season. They kept him up with the team throughout the entire year. You know, they burned a year on his entry-level contract, and then just yesterday, they decided to send Grigorenko back to the Quebec Ramparts of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. You know, you're just stunting the guy's development by jerking him around back and forth this entire season.
They did botch it in terms of the entry-level year. I don't mind, though, that they at least admitted the wrong and put him back in junior.
Okay. But they shouldn't have burnt a year on it then. If they weren't sure that he'd be good there the whole time, they shouldn't have burnt a year on it. That's it for this Saturday and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Mike Mascheka of the Canada-Israel Hockey School, Mike Heike of the Dallas Morning News, and Michael Trakos of the National Post. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Wednesday night, NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I won't be there. You guys get to enjoy a Drew-free atmosphere for about 2 weeks. Enjoy that. For my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Remus and producer Tim.
We're going to miss you, Drew.
Thank you. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.